And good afternoon to you, brethren. Today I'd like to speak about integrity. It's an interesting word, and it's used a number of times in the Bible. It's used in Psalms, it's used in Proverbs, and especially notable, it's used in the book of Job, where we can read that Job maintained his integrity. In fact, he gave a whole list of things that he did and didn't do, refrained from doing, that showed his integrity. Now, according to Strong's Concordance, integrity is translated from a Hebrew word meaning completeness. In a number of different objectives or senses, especially in humans, it refers to their lifestyle. Back in the days, this is going back about 9 years, when I was in paid employment, I read an interesting piece by a leadership strategist writing for a magazine entitled Engineers Australia. She was writing about the rapid increase in information, but then went on to say, when we start thinking about wisdom as against information, we move into the area of integrity. It takes huge integrity to decide to do and to say what we believe is right, particularly when others don't agree with us. It takes great insight to know what our values are and to commit to live by them. It takes personal awareness to notice when we stray from our values. And it takes great tact and political skill to live by our values and still build our relationships with those whose values may not accord with our own. Walking the path of integrity is to walk the path of a wise leader. As it says, a path less travelled. It is easier to do this in good company. Now, there are two people I'd like to talk about today, these being two of the very few people in the Bible that God had no negative comments about. Their lives were fashioned in integrity, even though the word is not used about them. We find the story of them in the book of Ruth. Now, the story starts during a famine when a man named Elimelech took his wife Naomi and two sons Mahlon and Chilion into Moab in order to survive the famine. Their names have interesting meanings. Elimelech means my God is king. Naomi means my pleasant one. However, Mahlon means sick and Chilion means failing or consumption. You couldn't call those positive names. Soon after they arrived there in Moab, Elimelech died, and his two sons married women of Moab, Orpah and Ruth. And after they lived there for about 10 years, both the sons died and left widows of the two women of Moab. Maybe their names were prophetic, sick and failing. And as will be realised later, Ruth, which means beauty, did not have any children at this time. Now, of course, Moab was closely related to Israel, in that Israel descended from Abraham and Moab descended from Abraham's nephew, Lot. But due to the way Moab had treated the Israelites when they came out of Egypt and tried to turn them away from God, God did not allow them to become a part of Israel. In fact, this determination by God caused some not to believe that Ruth was a Moabite. In fact, the British Israelite Society, for instance, teaches that Ruth was an Israelite living in Moab. But considering that God calls her a Moabite or a woman of Moab 7 times in the book, this is convincing that she was not an Israelite, but a descendant of Moab. After all, in the Bible, the number 7 means completeness and perfection. And yes, there are other mentions in the book that also show that she was a Moabite. Now, getting back to the story, the widow Naomi heard that the famine had ended in Israel, and so she headed back to the land of her people, and her daughters-in-law followed. Naomi thanked them for all that they had done for her and told them to go back to their country and find new husbands and live with them in their houses. This is where Ruth shows the integrity of her character. She believed the right thing to do was to continue to help her mother-in-law, who was a widow, And so she followed Naomi, even though her sister-in-law had gone back home to Moab. Even though Naomi strongly urged her to follow her sister-in-law, she did what she believed was right. Even seeing Orpah depart and the urging of her mother-in-law. Now that is integrity. As I mentioned in the introduction, it can be difficult to live by what we believe is correct in the presence of those who disagree with us. It can be even more difficult when those suggesting we do not follow our conscience are close family members and loved ones. So this must have made it very hard for Ruth. Her mother-in-law tried to dissuade her because of her advanced age. She stated that her sister-in-law had gone back to Moab, to her people and her gods. But Ruth had been greatly inspired by Naomi, by her example and by her teaching. Then Ruth made the famous statement that we hear so often in the book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. That's Ruth, chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, where Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you, or to turn back from following after you, for wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." This is where Ruth was renouncing her citizenship of Moab. In effect, she wanted to become fully a part of Israel, to be naturalized, if you will. It's like some of you listening today. You may have left your previous country and lived in the present country for a certain time, after which you decided to become naturalized, to become a citizen of that country, with all the rights and responsibilities that go along with that. For Ruth, there was no going back. It was a complete change, showing her integrity. That was a matter of completeness. Now, Naomi reminded her that she was too old to have any more children, especially sons, to provide another husband for Ruth, which implied that Ruth would probably live many years as a widow after Naomi died, living possibly alone in a foreign country with no promise of support. Her desire to be buried where her mother-in-law was buried showed she was going to stay there for her whole life. It was a total decision. Now, if you compare this with Joseph, with his attitude, he lived in Egypt for most of his life. But he told his descendants that when they left Egypt to take his bones with them, he did not want his bones to be left in Egypt permanently. This was not so with Ruth. So they were living in Bethlehem with Ruth assisting Naomi. And of course, living in Bethlehem, they had to have something to eat. So Ruth went to glean the fields. Now, most would think that going back to their family for support, rather than pick up food from the ground, would be easier. But Ruth had the integrity and character to work in a very humble job to support her mother-in-law. She knew what was right and did it, even in the face of uncertainty and hardship, with a possible long time in the future of loneliness. Even when gleaning, she asked permission. She asked of the servant in charge. In fact, that's stated in Ruth 2:7. This again shows her humility and integrity. God's law in Leviticus 23:22 commands the reapers not to gather all the gleanings, but rather leave them for the poor and for the stranger. In this case, Ruth fulfilled both of those criteria. She was both poor and a stranger that was being naturalized. Then, of course, she meets up with Boaz, another person of integrity of character. Now, he was obviously popular with his workers, and they greeted her as they greeted each other. This shows that he ran his farming business with a right spirit. And when Ruth met Boaz, she fell on her face in humility. Now, Boaz was well aware of the law of God, and because of his integrity, he provided generously for both Ruth and Naomi, assisting the two widows. He believed that was the right thing to do, and he did it. He obviously had a liking for Ruth, but because of his age, he went no further. Again, he believed that it was right for her to marry a younger man, whether rich or poor, and his integrity caused him to act accordingly. And even after the events on the threshing floor, he sent her home early so no one would know she had been there. That night with Boaz, he protected her reputation. And it's interesting, we read in Ruth chapter 3, verse 11, that Boaz told her that all the people of my town, that is Bethlehem, know that you are a virtuous woman. Her integrity was well known by all the citizens of Bethlehem. Now, relevant to this next matter, there is a law in Deuteronomy chapter 25, 5 to 10, which I'll just state the outline of it, that reveals thus the provision of a law that if a man dies without a son, his widow was to marry her brother-in-law, who was dwelling with them, to raise up a son to carry on the dead man's name and inheritance. Now, the application of this law is only mentioned twice in the scriptures. The first time it was with Judah and his daughter-in-law, Tamar. Tamar had married Judah's firstborn son, and because he was evil, God killed him. So then she married Judah's secondborn son, Onan. And because he refused to raise up a son to carry on the dead son's name, God killed him. Now this law is also applied in the book of Ruth, where because her brother-in-law was dead, it was considered that the requirement of this law was extended to the closest relative, the closest kinsman, as it says. And even in the process of offering the inheritance to the closest kinsman, who refused it, lest it ruined his own inheritance, Boaz acted in full integrity and was willing to redeem a field that Naomi had sold and to have Ruth as his wife. In fact, it is worth reading the book of Ruth, chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. That's Ruth, chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have brought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren, and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day." Now this shows his integrity, that he was willing to take on the full responsibility of the next of kin. And of course the fact that she was a young woman of good character may certainly have helped. But again, this was demonstrating Boaz's integrity. So what can we learn from their examples? As we heard in the introduction to this sermonette, it takes huge integrity to decide to do and say what is believed to be right, particularly when others don't agree with us. As we saw earlier, Naomi suggested that Ruth go back to her people rather than live a life of loneliness and difficulties in Israel. In the case of Boaz, he made the choice to redeem a field and to take on a wife. Now, probably a year before that, he had no intention of buying another field or getting married again, as we assume that he had been a widower. Of course, we are to study God's word and make sure we do and say what is in accordance with God's will, not just what we think is right, not what we think is right for ourselves. And both Ruth and Boaz knew God's law and were willing to obey it at possibly great cost to themselves. For Ruth, this meant that she had the probability of being a lonely widow for many years. For Boaz, this meant he would incur the cost of buying a field and marrying. This shows that we're both persons of integrity. Now, as I quoted in the introduction, it takes great tact and political skill to live by our values and to still build our relationships with those whose values may not accord with our own. This is somewhat similar to what God says in Romans 12:18. That's Romans chapter 12, verse 18, where God says, "If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men." So we should walk the path less travelled, as mentioned in the introduction, the path of integrity, for that is very pleasing to God.